Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Your Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And at the moment, one of the places that is lighting up as a potentially mortal peril to parts of the free world, including quite possibly the United States, is North Korea. And our first guest is a man who has spent some time getting close to the regime and the ideology and the thinking of Juche, which is the mantra of Kim Jong-un's regime and that of his forefathers. He is Rob Montz. He has produced just now and will be airing or screening very shortly in the Washington area a short action documentary entitled Juche Strong, and it's a very important window on what it is we're up against and why the kind of behavior that is coming out of North Korea today is coming out of North Korea today. Rob Montz, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me with you, and I love the description of an action documentary. That's certainly going to be part of my multimedia global branding campaign now. Yeah. I love the way that it sounds.
Please do.
And I'll also say, If I can accomplish nothing else, the chief reason why I gave my documentary a slightly alienating, obviously difficult to pronounce name is that I'd like to educate people about how to correctly pronounce what's actually Juche. Juche. So if I can get every American in this country to be correctly pronouncing Juche, I know that I will have done my job. And yeah, the film itself is actually, it's unique in the sense that it takes the North Korean propaganda apparatus pretty seriously. I think in the typical Western narrative or Western media presentations, the propaganda is seen as so bizarre and so hopelessly irrational and so hopelessly comedic that there's no way that anyone could ever believe it. And also, a lot of what gets passed off as North Korean propaganda actually isn't. So what I attempted to do was sort of go beyond that superficial media representation and dig into the original source material, which includes, you know, the books about the subject, some of the top experts on the planet on the subject, and then going there myself and asking questions. What are the actual particular components of the worldview of the average North Korean? And obviously, much of that worldview has been infused with and informed by a very specific set of propaganda that's been dispensed by sort of the ruling Kim family. And Juche is sort of the philosophical centerpiece. It's not the entirety of what is the national ideology, but it's very much an essential element, and sort of roughly it translates to this notion of self-reliance, which is that North Korea is a free and independent and prosperous country that does not depend upon polluting foreign influences for its achievements and its survival. Obviously, there's an odd irony to that because it most definitely does, but that's the message and that's the philosophy that the regime sort of rests itself up in.
Okay, so Rob Montz, let me ask you, you've been to North Korea. Give us a sense of your experience there, what you were allowed to see, how structured were your conversations with the what you call the average North Korean, and the insights that you got into the kind of system that was at work in propagandizing the people of North Korea into believing in Juche.
So I went there last summer, and if you're a Western tourist, you do have your ability to move freely in that country pretty dramatically curtailed and restricted. So I don't want to overstate the access that I have. Basically, the only people you're really allowed to talk to for an extended period of time is the two handlers that are immediately assigned to your group once you walk out of the airport. But then you could also have, I mean, there were a couple nights that were infused with lots of alcohol that I interacted with several other normal average North Koreans that were also staying with or at the hotels that I was staying with. So there was several unguarded moments that occurred there. And frankly, those interactions are one of the bigger emotional drives for me about really trying to get this film out there. Because once you actually sit down with these people and you're not just reading about them in some sort of reactionary blog post and you just talk to the average North Korean, it's stunning how similar they are to us in a lot of respects. But then also there are key parts of their worldview that are very different and are radically exotic compared to sort of the worldviews that we have. So,
but give us a sense of that, Rob. What specifically? I imagine part of this was the sense of the threat that we pose to them, and therefore the need for not only self-reliance but for formidable military capability that I guess must, in the minds of these indoctrinated folks, help justify the hardship, the privation that they are subjected to in the furtherance of maintaining this military. Is that right?
Yeah, it contextualizes it as part of a grander national struggle. And if you read the press releases that are being sent out now over the course of this most recent military ramp-up, it's all done as, we need this nuclear program as a defensive measure against the invading American imperialists. So there is an important distinction there in the sense that it's not being sold as, we need to go spread our socialist utopia across the Pacific Ocean. It's, we need to continue to devote an extensive amount of resources to this particular program, because if we don't, the Americans are going to come get you. And then also, what does that mean specifically, Americans are going to come get you? And it seems like, again, this is the kind of answer you'd only get if you sort of step beyond just the very superficial way that this country is portrayed. A big part of the way that the ruling Kim family and its propaganda talks about Americans is that they're coming to pollute the pure Korean blood, that there is definitely an ethnic purity component to the national ideology. And that really has a lot of resonance, I think, for a lot of the average North Korean, because of the history of what some might not so charitably call xenophobia that's been on that peninsula for hundreds and hundreds of years, a deep and embedded mistrust of outsiders. So that's why that notion of beating back ethnically polluting hordes has such resonance.
Indeed. Our guest is Rob Monts. He is the director of a short film entitled Juche Strong. You can find more about it at Juche, J-U-C-H-E, strong.com. Rob is a film fellow at the Moving Picture Institute and a graduate of Brown University. Rob, bring us up to the moment. We're hearing the regime that has indoctrinated its people in this kind of xenophobic sentiment and repressed them and subjected them in other ways to an almost unbelievable level of propaganda. To what extent is the present crisis, in your judgment, really all about the regime sort of playing this out to its logical, if very dangerous, extreme?
Well, I basically lean upon people that are much smarter than I am, that have studied the country for a lot longer than I am, to direct me for these things. And the ones that I really trust that have been spot on before have said that it's almost entirely for the sake of drumming up additional domestic support for the young general, who is still obviously kind of only in the early years of his rule. So that's an explanation that I find pretty compelling. And also the dissonance between how radically aggressive the rhetoric is and the actual level of military mobilization in North Korea itself. The fact that they're not coinciding with each other would lead oneself to believe that it's done mostly for the sake of drumming up additional support for its people. And that's a broader idea that's explored in the film, which is you can get people to withstand quite a bit of material deprivation if you give them a certain level of spiritual sustenance. If you frame it in a broader national struggle, that suffering on its own is much more difficult to withstand. But then if you think that as an average North Korean farmer, going out and working an extra 4 hours helps in this grander national project of beating back the Yankee imperialists, and ultimately, this is a utopia that's sold to the average North Korean, finally and ultimately reuniting the peninsula,
Under the North's control. Yeah, it's I guess the sort of classic totalitarian phenomenon of social engineering. Rob Monts, tell us how people can see this film. I understand you've got two screenings in the Washington area coming up.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, again, the website is juchestrong.com, J-U-C-H-E, strong.com, and you can see all the screening opportunities there. So tomorrow, in the D.C. area, it's screening at the Cato Institute with one of the top-notch scholars they've got there is going to be participating. And then a week from tomorrow, also in the D.C. area, it's screening at the South Korean Embassy, and that's up online and also up on the website. And I'd love for anyone to come there. There's going to be question and answer sessions after both of the screenings.
We commend it to you. Please check out Juche Strong. Thank you very much for joining us, Rob Monts.
Go to securefreedom.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Diana West, who we have the very great privilege of seeing, or at least speaking to, each week at this time. Diana, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. How are you?
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about an essay that you have written, and you can find her many syndicated pieces and other superb blocking at dianawest.net about the Saudi Crescent. First of all, let's talk a little bit about what that is, or what it might yet be, and what role the United States government seems to be playing in expanding it.
I have been perplexed, frankly, by watching the current policies unfold, as we've been watching them in the so-called Arab Spring, which I don't even think we have to use that phrase anymore. It seems to have withered away. But in terms of watching the strategy that is unfolding in the Middle East, in Syria, having gone from Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, Syria, and trying to put it into some sort of historical context. And I was taken with a recent piece that was pointing out, this was by Tony Cartolucci, that was pointing out some reporting that Seymour Hersh had done back in 2007 in The New Yorker, where he had focused on changes in the Bush administration policy in the Middle East that seemed to kind of bring into relief something I'd been thinking about as well, which namely is the notion that all of this is being done in some way to freeze out Iran. And in other words, that Syria and Iran being allies are the current focus of these very messy and dangerous revolutions we see going on, put forward by Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and other jihad forces. So how
of the Sunni persuasion, this is the important common denominator, I guess, is that they line up against the Shias of Iran.
Well, yes, although we have Sunnis also in Syria, so it doesn't quite work, but Syria and Iran definitely work together.
But the Sunnis in Syria are aligning with the Muslim Brotherhood, more or less, it seems, and against Assad. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think there's a mixture. I think we do see a mixture. But the point is that the Bush administration essentially laid this strategy out. And indeed, Condoleezza Rice spoke of it at the time in terms of advancing, this is back in 2006-07, advancing what she was talking about as a Sunni crescent. And indeed, we
see... She literally used that term?
Yes.
Wow, that is...
Yes, the Sunni crescent. Mm. And this was supposed to include the Shiite obvious majority in Iraq that would somehow be compelled to blend in with this Sunni crescent against Iran. And none of it's working out. And what I really think is going on is this was a tremendous deception that was sold to the Bush administration and others, and including continuing on in the Obama administration, to convince America to get behind Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood as a means of isolating what has been painted as our largest and dominant enemy, Iran, completely ignoring the fact that Sunni Islam is equally as dangerous, equally as threatening to the Western way of life. And so, in other words, we have, I think, been completely sold a line of goods in terms of presenting, pushing these various Sunni elements forward.
Yeah. And let's just drill down on who some of these elements are, Diana West, because as you know so well, we are being told, most especially by the Obama administration, that at least some are people we can do business with, notably the Muslim Brotherhood. What do we know about the Muslim Brotherhood that suggests that far from being people we can do business with, these are people who are determined to destroy us, every bit as much as Al-Qaeda and for that matter, the Iranians of the Shia stripe?
Well, exactly. What we know about them, that the only thing we need to know about them is that they are driven to spread Sharia throughout the world and establish a caliphate, which, of course, happens to coincide with the aims of all the other Islamic elements we're talking about. They all are on the same page when it comes to this. And they just pretend that they have different names and different, you know, resumes, basically.
Or different Sharia, or sometimes
different Sharia sometimes, although basically they have the same attitudes toward non-Muslims, which is really all we need to focus on.
The operative part, correct.
The operative part that affects us. But what we're seeing, I mean, and also Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda have been intimately linked right from the beginning. You had Osama bin Laden joining the Muslim Brotherhood as a college student.
Indeed.
I mean,
and his son-in-law having resided there until happily recently picked up. Now in New York City awaiting trial.
Diana, there's one point, though, that I think is very illustrative of the continuity of this terrible, disastrous policy, and that is that 2 days after 9/11, within 48 hours, Prince Bandar, who was then the ambassador from Saudi Arabia to America, was sitting on the portico of the White House smoking cigars with President Bush and discussing, well, we don't exactly know, but we suspect it had something to do with airlifting over 150 Saudis out of the country, including many who should have been interviewed by the FBI. Flash forward.
Or interrogated, as the case may be, right?
Correct. Or arrested. Flash forward to 2013, and we're getting reports from various sources, not necessarily on the front pages of our mainstream media yet, but enough of them to wonder whether there is truth to this, that it is Prince Bandar who is actually enabling and pushing and funding the Al-Nusra Front, which is the most vicious jihadist front in Syria at this moment that is taking over the rebel side.
That the State Department has actually designated as a terrorist organization, to the great consternation and unhappiness of its allies, some of whom we are apparently now trying to bring to power in Syria. Diana, which brings me to the State Department, which of course has made that designation. It was done under Hillary Clinton's watch. Hillary Clinton, of course, made a speech yesterday before, I think it was the Women in the World Summit, about the plight of women. And I just want, having heard, as you have done so nicely, the sort of backdrop to this policy during the Bush years, continuing and accelerating under the Obama administration, of trying to bring to power, trying to expand the reach of the very people who are arguably the most serious threat to women in the world today, namely Islamists of these various stripes throughout the Middle East and North Africa. Were you of the view that what Hillary was doing was really launching, without acknowledging it, of course, her presidential campaign for 2016, and does she in fact have a vulnerability on this score, what she has done to help empower enemies of women in the Middle East through her time in the State Department?
Now, let me answer your second question first with another question. How stupid are we? How stupid are we, the American people, to buy this utter line of flimflam from Hillary Clinton? Exactly as you describe it, in terms of advancing the Islamic reach of Sharia, which one of its primary objects of suppression is women. How can we buy that she can do this on the one hand, that letting alone her own role in enabling her husband, the serial sexual abuser, to remain predator in office, and to stand up for him as well. So she has a terrible history, in other words, both on the personal level and on a macro, gigantic, global level of doing things to cover up for the worst kinds of depredations against women. Now announcing her probable presidential run, certainly a testing of the waters.
Telegraphing it, presumably to try to encourage titillating demands that she run, which is the most cynical of these efforts. Diana West, we have to let you go. Thank you for joining us. Do it again next week. Next up, we'll be visiting with Jim Hansen.
A boots on the ground perspective straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Republicans are being urged by four of their senators, prominent partisans, and special interests to consign their party to permanent minority status. Oh, that's not the stated purpose of so-called comprehensive immigration reform, but it would be the practical and predictable effect. There are, of course, many other problems with this initiative, including that it immediately rewards with legal status people who have violated our laws, and at enormous cost. But as Mark Krikorian recently observed, a similar effort was deliberately mounted by the left in Britain two decades ago to change the demographics and, for almost a generation, the politics of that country. Neither the United States as a whole nor the GOP will benefit from repeating this error, no matter how many times Republicans are told that a new amnesty will earn Hispanic votes. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fastballing philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East, and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260. In Washington, D.C.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Jim Hansen, the guy who brings to us our boots on the ground perspective, I like to think, based upon his time in the Special Operations Forces of the United States Army. He's a man we turn to understand what's going on inside the military at the moment and what some of the implications might be for the rest of us. And Jim, I saw that you were one of the signers of this so-called SOF 700 letter, the Special Operations Forces, more than 700, I guess, now have joined forces to urge a rigorous investigation, a select committee be established to get to the bottom of what actually led up to and happened during Benghazi Gate. Tell us a little bit about that initiative and why you rogered up.
Well, Frank, it was a disgraceful event that I think, I don't know whether it was the election, whether it was the media's reluctance as Obama's propaganda organ to speak about, the things that have gone horribly wrong under his watch. But we abandoned a number of people to a situation that was essentially an attack on the United States. You know, our embassy is sovereign soil. Our people serving there deserve our full support, and we gave them nothing. You know, we left them flapping in the breeze, and I don't know why. You know, there is a lot of extreme opaqueness about it, and I think it's something that's Congress's job. When something goes that badly, Congress has a responsibility to dig into it, and we think that should happen.
Yeah. Well, I commend you for signing on to this effort and for the initiative being made by the Special Operations Speaks group that put it together. And I hope that it will in fact be the case that Congress will get off the dime and get that select committee established. Jim, I was struck by, speaking of the Congress, testimony yesterday to the effect that the commanding officer of the U.S. Pacific Command, an admiral by the name of Locklear, was making noises that I must say I hope are true, but sound a little bit like whistling past the graveyard to me. He was telling the Congress that, you know, we've basically got everything under control, irrespective of what North Korea might do. As a guy who spent some time in that theater of operations, I'd like your sense of what the ground truth actually is.
Well, Korea and that entire Pacific Rim was my area of operations, and specifically Korea for a while was a major focus. And the problem is you cannot account for any contingency that a country with zero restrictions and zero need to act rationally could do. You know, we can't know what they're going to do. I mean, we may, okay, let's put all our missile defenses out there. Let's do what we can do. And sure, we can beat them in a conventional war. But they could drive a nuke, you know, down to the border and clack it off. They could put a boat off the side. There's just so many things they could do that we have absolutely no way to account for. That's a statement that I think, I don't know who he's trying to convince. You know, anybody who has any, you know, serious expertise in this area knows it's false. And most people just from a common sense perspective can say, no, we can't account for everything. And the war over there would be ugly. The last one didn't go that well. And the last one still isn't over. That war never ended.
Really,
so,
good points.
So it's a bad situation. And the best we can hope for is that they're basically doing their, you know, annual saber rattling for food.
Right. Well, and hope is not necessarily a sound strategy, needless to say. But, Jim, it's against that backdrop. And once again, our guest is Jim Hansen, a former special operator in the United States Army, that I want to ask you about the early indicators of what is happening to the United States military at the moment that makes what you've just said, I think, all the more worrying a prospect. Namely, for example, that the Air Force has announced to accompany the president's budget being sent up to the Congress that it's going to stand down a third of its operational aircraft because of budget cuts and the need to use what resources are thereby freed up to just try to keep the remaining two-thirds going. As a guy with time in the military, Jim, what does it likely mean, first and foremost, to our deterrent posture dealing with actors like Kim Jong-un, but also what does it mean to our forces if they're not allowed to train or otherwise operate things like advanced aircraft in terms of their readiness and warfighting capability?
Well, I think the first thing you said, Frank, is the most dangerous piece. The U.S. military, in an ideal world, is just a deterrent force. You know, we would rather not go to war. We'd rather have people take a look and say, wow, you know, if I do something stupid, that's really going to hurt when they respond. You know, and consequently, pain avoidance will lead them to not do the stupid thing they were looking at. And it's worked extremely well. You know, you can, you know, probably count more successes for the U.S. military in causing people to rethink bad ideas than in all of our actions in battle combined. And I think the fact that we now have the Navy and the Air Force, who are in a large way our deterrent forces, the land forces are, you already stepped over the line, this is what's going to hurt you, piece of our military. The Navy with the carrier groups and the Air Force with our ability to project power and you know, put a precision strike anywhere on Earth
are designed to make people think twice, and we're stopping them from doing that. So that's a horrible thing. And then if you look at the fact, like you said, that we are not going to have as highly trained a force, and you know the people who need to actually employ those weapons and employ those systems are not going to have the training they need, then when things do go wrong, as they will, we're going to have more casualties. We're going to do a less capable job of responding, and none of that is a good idea. And it's happening now and going to continue as we try to figure out, you know, what the budgeting is actually going to look like.
Right. And Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel has indicated there are going to be more of these cuts for sure. Jim, let me ask you about something else. You written about, I believe at Black5.net, your concerns about what John Brennan, the president's choice to be the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, has done with a woman who had been slated to take over, the first woman, for that matter, to take over the Directorate of Operations. What's the story there?
Well, the bottom line is the CIA captured prisoners, interrogated them, and gained actionable intelligence during the Bush administration. And ever since then, the left, the media, and again, same thing. And in this case, members of Obama's team, including John Brennan, who was involved, have been backpedaling, bad-mouthing, and causing trouble about what were the proper use of, you know, U.S. government power. And you know, the things that happened under the CIA in the Bush administration, the worst thing they did was waterboarding. Okay, happened to me, happened to many. Now we have extrajudicial killings, and yet somehow the fact that this woman was involved with that program, which John Brennan was involved with and approved of, is a reason to stop the most qualified person from running the most important part of the CIA. It's pure political gutlessness. It is a disgrace for a group that, you know, pretends that diversity matters. And to me, diversity doesn't matter. Competence matters.
Yeah.
And it is a fairly well-established fact this woman should be running the Director of Operations, and the only reason she isn't is because Obama doesn't want to take the abuse from his left that comes with, you know, supporting someone who did what was supposed to be done by the CIA.
Yeah, it's very troubling, and I'm afraid that it's probably not the only instance of very bad judgment and political blinders on the part of John Brennan. In fact, his whole posture towards the Islamists is a case in point. Jim, we have to wrap it up there, let you go. Thank you very much for joining us. Jim Hansen, a former boots-on-the-ground guy we turn to with regularity. We'll talk with you again soon.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Sanger.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. Uh-huh! I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit card.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
Mike Gallagher doesn't apologize for speaking the truth.
People are not economically equal. They never have been.
They never will be.
But we believe in giving people the opportunity to try to become financially successful.
How are you going to make a janitor economically equal to a CEO?
But that's what this fierce liberal mindset tries to suggest. And then everybody's happy. Right?
Right.
Wrong.
The Mike Gallagher Show. Weekdays from 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Joseph Connor. He is a man we've talked with in the past about, among other things, a marvelous new book that he has co-authored entitled The New Founders. But I value our chance to visit with him most especially because he has had a personal firsthand exposure to terrorism in this country, not just on 9/11, but before that, when terrorists, elements in this country killed his father. And Joe, it's always, I think, incredibly important to get your perspective on these things, especially as there are some developments underway at the moment that seem to have at their core a kind of rehabilitation, if not actual romanticizing of some of the terrorist elements you've confronted. Give us a sense of the sort of cast of characters, if you will, that we should be keeping our eye on and what's being done to rehabilitate them at the moment.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Frank. I'd like to talk about Kathy Bodine. I don't know if people have seen recently that she was hired by Columbia University as a professor. They may not know who Kathy Bodine is, but she was an integral member of the Weather Underground, the same group where Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn were leaders. Bodine was convicted of killing three cops during the Brinks heist in 1981, and they were Waverly Brown, Ed O'Grady, and Peter Page, and they should not be forgotten. She went to jail for 22 years before she was paroled. I should mention that before she killed them, she was a fugitive from the Weather Underground where they had blown up an apartment she was in New York. She disappeared for 10 years. She reappeared at the Brinks heist,
where an amalgam of ex-weathermen, Black Panthers, May 19th communists, all kind of got together and did this robbery in Nyack, New York. Bodine was arrested. She went to prison, like I said, for years. She came out, and now she's been hired by Columbia University as a professor.
Yeah. Now, you say, Joseph Connor, that Columbia might not know who she is. That sort of strains credulity, not least because, of course, John Podhoretz has written a very powerful piece about her under the headline, Columbia's Pet Terrorist. Kathy Bodine surely fits right in the New York Post on the 2nd of April. I think you've had a letter to the Post as well on the subject. This seems unlikely that they're not familiar with where this woman was for the 22 years of her life, for example, in the federal pen.
Well, and it may have come out the wrong way. I really meant to say that the people who are listening to the show may not know who she is.
Okay,
her name doesn't sound that familiar.
Right.
You'll hear about Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers, but Kathy Bodine was a member much the same as they were.
But it's worth mentioning to an audience that I think is fairly sophisticated about these matters, but nonetheless may not be, you know, keeping these names front of mind. But Bernadine Dorn and William Ayers, of course, are close friends of President Obama. So there is a pattern here with his past connection to Columbia, of course, of looking the other way at the criminal relationships that these folks have had to terrorist organizations. And Joe, remind us what happened to one of the groups or with one of the groups that was associated with many of these other outfits, the FALN, and how it touched your own life personally.
Sure. In 1975, my father was killed by the FALN bombing of Francis Tavern in New York. Francis is a restaurant where my dad worked for a bank in the city. He was 33 years old, and he was there at lunch when the FALN set this bomb. And in their note, it was to kill reactionary corporate executives. And they were a Marxist-trained Cuban-directed group. They were very connected, as it's turned out, to groups like the Weather Underground, the Black Panthers, the May 19th Communist Organization. There's a friend of mine, Rick Hahn, who's writing a book or has actually finished a book about it called American Terrorists. They were connected to the extent that when Oscar Lopez, one of the FALN members, was trying to bust out of prison, which he tried twice, he had directed the members on the outside to get C4 explosives. When the FALN member went to get the explosives, he actually went to an undercover FBI agent. When they made the deal to get the C4 to the FALN, it wasn't the FALN at all who picked it up. It was members of the Weather Underground. It was a Donna Wilmot and Claude Marx. Right. So there were many connections between them. They shared safe houses. They shared dynamite. Vans were used by both the FALN and the Weather Underground. And these Weather Underground people are the very same people that our president is friends with. So by extension and connection, the people who killed my father, and Oscar Lopez is still in jail looking to get out, by the way, and that you said about names we should keep an eye on. Oscar turned down President Clinton's clemency in 1999 and remained in prison. He tried to get out 2 years ago, and I went out to the federal prison in Indiana and faced him across a small table and successfully kept him in jail. But there's a group out there that's very connected politically, in the media, and now within academia, that there's a soft spot in those groups for these leftist terrorists, and we really need to keep an eye on this. They've infiltrated and in many levels of, like I said, the media, of our government, and the academia.
Yeah. In a way, the media is the least of the problem. If you've got the president of the United States personally hooked up with these guys, it's very worrying. And you wrote a very powerful piece to your dad on Red State back in March of 2009 that's worth calling attention to as well, Joe Connor. It was very touching, and I must say that your description of the connections between these various terrorist entities and leftist radicals and revolutionaries and the people who murdered your dad is compelling, and your indictment, really, of President Obama for his association with him is as well. Let me ask one other thing, Joe, before we run out of time. I'm told that there is a new film by Robert Redford that is now yes. making the rounds, The Company They Keep. Tell us what we know about it, and what, why would Robert Redford be participating in what seems to be a love fest with these guys as well?
Well, you know, Redford has a long history of leftist causes, and even the movie Legal Eagles, which came out with Deborah Winger back in the late 70s or early 80s, had a poster of William Morales, who was an FALN member, in the movie. So he has had some sort of soft spot for these guys. I haven't seen the movie myself, so full disclosure, but from what I understand and have read, he has romanticized this left-wing terrorism. These people were murderers. When I wrote the piece to my dad, I wrote about, Dad, the people who couldn't beat us by bombings and terror have now turned to politics to beat us. And I don't, maybe I shouldn't say beat us, but right now they're running the show and we need to fight back. You know, our president is so connected to these people. And people will deny, you know, he just knew Bill Ayers or Bernadine Dorn. He is the president. Like, when did it start being okay that the president can be associated with people who are anti-American? He's the president. Like, I don't understand how that doesn't resonate with people. He's not the dog catcher. He's not even a congressman. He's a president.
It's not just that that he's connected with these people who are anti-Americans, as you say. These are, in some cases, people who are criminals.
They're criminals.
Convicted,
they're murderers.
Felons, yes. Involved in murderous terrorist attacks against this country. Let me just close with, a note of your book that you've written with Michael Duncan. We spoke with the two of you, I think, last week about a terrific book, The New Founders. Just going out just a minute, what would the founders have made of a president with these kinds of proclivities? 30 seconds.
And the founders knew that this could possibly happen, but they saw that you can have tyranny within a democracy by not disclosing to the people the facts. And I think that they would attribute his rise to a couple of things. One is people not knowing who he is, and that happened in a democracy. He was apparently fairly elected.
It did indeed, and there's more to be disclosed, I think. And we have to let you go. Joe Connor, the author or co-author of The New Founders. You can find out more about his life and his writings at thenewfounders.net. Thank you, Joe, for joining us as always. Keep up the good work. And that's it for this program, folks. Tune in again tomorrow, same time, same station, and we'll talk to you then.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.